Going Linux, episode 249, Computer America, number 75. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide at ComputerAmerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello, and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, this week at least, certified ethical hacker Charles Tindall.
Charles, hey, you're back again for 2 days in a row. Boy.
I know, it's weird. It's getting kind of strange.
Yeah, you know, and we are hoping the technology gods are going to smile upon us, though. We've been having a couple of really weird technical glitches, but hopefully everything is working. It seems to be. Within 2 seconds of going on the air, everything kind of came snapped back. So we'll hopefully everything is working, and we'll go with that. But in the meantime, as I said, it is the third Thursday. Now, you know, I know that it used to be the third Tuesday of the month, but because we've had a schedule change now, because Charles is with us here Wednesdays and Thursdays and Fridays, and he wanted to do the Linux show, so we've moved Larry Bushy from the third Tuesday of the month, which he's been on now for, what, in the past couple of, past number of years. Five years now. And so we're now moving that because we defer to our co-host. And so we're now having the Linux show on the third Thursday of the month. And this is really technically the first one that we're doing that. Just a couple of updates here for those of you who don't get our show reminder, schedule change. Last night we had D-Wave Systems on rather than having Intel on. Intel is going to be on the – just this month, they're going to be on the following Wednesday, the 23rd of July. They're going to be on with us from 10 to 11 just this month. And also on the day before, the 22nd, there will be no live show. We're going to have a best-of show, and then back on the 23rd, and then the week plays out as normal. This will be updated in our weekly email newsletter, the show reminder. Okay, so let's kind of get started here. As I said, it's our all-Linux show, and that voice you heard in the back is our guest correspondent. We're going to be talking about Linux, all Linux. Yeah, of course, the Linux operating, it's an operating system if you don't know what Linux is, like Windows and Mac OS X. And Linux is, you know, an important and popular operating system. And so we've decided that every month we would devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux. And if you have a Linux question, comment, suggestion, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Now, joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to the show, even though it's the wrong night. It sure seems like the wrong night.
You should feel special because you got moved around because I had to reschedule stuff. So everybody's like, yeah. Charles is not around. He's the cool one. This is how I like to think about it.
Well, that's okay. Change is good as a rest.
Right?
Whatever it is they say about that.
Now, as I said, we pick a topic every single month, and I always ask Larry to do that. Although you have a question, if it's off topic, but as long as it's about Linux, you can give us a call, okay? But our topic for tonight, and I think it's a rather ambitious topic, is...
Why Linux will rule the world!
Well, quite a... Linux and total world domination.
Yeah, I think my title is better.
We didn't want to go too big with it.
Right.
Ruling of the world.
Linux and total world
domination.
Yeah.
So,
yes, that's,
yeah.
All right, so that's the topic. And so But again, and we're going to talk about that, and again, you can see it all on the show notes page, and you can follow along with the links. But if you, as I said, if you want to, if you have any questions about Linux, you know, any related topic, we have the guy here to help you get the answers to your questions. Again, 347-884-8881. We'll get you on and get you through. So let's start off with the Linux topic for the month, Linux and total world domination. And the first thing I see is this pie chart. You know, what am I looking at?
Not too ambitious there. Let me kind of share it with our video audience here with the screen share.
Okay.
And so there we go. This is our show notes, right?
Yeah.
And there's the graphic right there, and it shows that Linux as an operating system family has 97% share.
Hmm.
And 98.2% share when it comes to performance. So what's this all about? Since when did Linux become the dominant operating system in the world, right?
Well, awesome. And
it is just that good.
Noticing a significant lack of a particular other operating system, which means it's most likely getting lumped in with its cooler cousin.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So, this is actually some graphics from the 43rd top 500 supercomputer list that was published in June, on June 23rd, as a matter of fact. And it was published during an ISC 2014 in Leipzig, Germany, where they held this conference. And this is the publication that came out of there. And it says that of the top 500 world's supercomputers, 485 of those 500 run Linux. So that's where the total world domination comes from. We're dominating the world when it supercomputers, which, that's no shameful statistic right there. So Linux dominated both the number of computers that are of the top 500 supercomputers. 485 of them are Linux, and to round out the rest of the list, 12 of them run Unix. That's Linux's older father, if you will. And two of them run Windows. And
go right back down.
Okay. Yeah.
Painful.
And one of them runs a mixed operating system. Now, I'm not sure what that means, but I don't know.
Not one of them runs OS X, huh?
Mixed heritage. Not one of them runs OS X. That's correct.
Well, technically, they all run OS X. They all run a version of Unix. So
that's true.
Yes, exactly right. And there is some statistics we'll take a look at on the on their website that goes along with this report. We'll do a little interactive thing with the website. I'll show you how you can find out some of the details of this, as well as take a look at these graphics and slice it and dice it in whatever way you want. But that mixed one, maybe we can dig into it and see what it's actually running there. And I think it may be running a mixture of Unix and Linux and BSD and maybe some other things. So we'll see. But the 12, as I said, there are 485 Linux machines in the top 500 supercomputers. Of the 12 that run Unix, the fastest of those ranked 60th.
Hmm.
And of the two that run Windows, the fastest of those was
249th. 294th.
294th. Yes, that's my dyslexia.
There you go. He was having a Windows computational moment. That's why it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was using my Windows phone to compute that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was. Anyway, and some of the other statistics that might be of interest here are the U.S. has the largest number of those 500 computers, 255, and.
What happened to the US? They lost 10 of them. What happened?
Yeah, it's down from 265 when they did the survey back in November. So I don't know. Linux took over those 10, I think. China's the second country, or the country with the second most number of supercomputers, with 76, and they're up from 63, so China overtook some in the U.S. Over 85% of these 500 supercomputers run the Intel processor, 8% IBM Power Processor, and 6% AMD Opteron. And I don't think, does that add up to 100%? Probably not. And if not, then the rest are something else. 96% of those 500 supercomputers have six or more cores in their processor. 83% have eight or more cores. So there's a lot of processing power going on in these, which is one of the reasons why they can be supercomputers. 36, when you're talking about hardware vendors on these computers, 36% are HP, 35% are IBM, and 10% are Cray. You remember the original supercomputers way back when?
Sure do.
They were originally Cray computers. Now Cray is relegated to 10%. Interesting.
Wow. I mean, they were pretty to look at. They were like reminded like a Stonehenge. You know, they were like curved. They had benches you could sit on.
Right.
And they were really kind of nice.
And they had benches all around the processor.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The rest of it took up the rest of the room. Mm-hmm. And this must have been back in the early 90s, I suppose. So I think what we should probably do is click into one of these two links down here. So if we want to take a look at the top 500, the list itself, if we click into that first link, you'll end up with the list. So there are a number of lists. The most recent one is the one from June of 2014. And you can see they've been doing this for quite a while. They go back. Well, let's see, scroll all the way to the bottom. They've been doing this since 1993, it looks like. So you can actually do some comparison of a lot of these if you really are interested in digging into this. But if we go to the June 2014 list, you'll see a lot of words on the screen. And those words give the statistics that I just gave. They give some more statistics. And if you scroll down a little bit further, you can begin to see the ranking. And you can see the top-ranked number one supercomputer is one in China, and it is the National Supercomputer Center at Guangzhou. I think that may be how you pronounce it, I hope. It's a system called the Tianhe-2 or Milky Way 2, I guess that's the English translation. It has over 3,000 cores. It has a maximum of almost 34 teraflops per second, and it can peak out at 55 teraflops per second, and it takes 17,000, almost 18,000 kilowatts of power to run this thing. So, Wow.
You know,
Now, the number two, though, is in the U.S. at Oak Ridge National Labs, and it only takes 8,000 kilowatts. So it's much more energy efficient than the one in China. They must be running it on coal or something. But, the number two is actually a Cray machine. So they're running an Opteron, or running 5,600 Opteron processors. These numbers are just mind-boggling, aren't they? Amazing. Amazing, amazing.
I bet you this wasn't written on a Windows computer. It's too hard.
Last night we had D-Wave Systems on talking about quantum computers, and evidently those are going to put everything to shame when those things are up and running. I mean, the way they work. You know.
Yeah. I'd like to see the next iteration of this supercomputer list. That will be interesting.
Right.
So if you click on that second link, now we get into the little bit of interactivity here, and you can slice and dice this information in a lot of different ways, and this is where it becomes interesting. Mm-hmm. So by default, it comes up with the 2014 survey. You can actually look at any of the previous surveys if you wish, but let's just focus in on 2014 for a second here. So right now it's showing categories by vendor. And so you can see HP is at the top there with 36%. 181 of the 500 computers run HP. 176, that's 35%, run IBM, and 10% are Cray, and the rest of them are a lot smaller percentage. They have manufacturers like SGI, Bull, Dell, and Fujitsu. Interesting. Okay, and so they're looking at the number of systems in the top graph, and in the bottom graph, they're looking at the performance. So you can see that even though HP has the largest number of systems, IBM has the largest number of systems that have highest performance, it looks like, with 32% compared to HP's 15%, 15.5%. So a little bit of difference there. And let's see how else we can do this. So if we dig into operating system family now, so we'll just switch this category to operating system family, hit the submit button, and let's see what the graphs look like. Okay, so these are the graphs that I had in the show notes. 97% of the top 500 supercomputers run Linux, and Unix is the next one down with, what's that say, hover over at 12. So that's 2.4%, and Windows with a 0.4%. And Linux certainly has an even larger percent share when it comes to the number of or the amount of processing power, sheer processing performance, if you will. So now let's, I think they have, let's see here. If we choose operating system instead of operating system family, now we dig even further into this. And now we have a greater breakdown here. So it shows 410 as Linux. How come the Linux share went down? Well, that's kind of a generic Linux that's not broken out by brand, if you will. So you SUSE Linux is here and CentOS is here. Those are versions of Linux.
Yeah, yeah, I have a question. So is this only listing out like Linux as an operating system, or is this talking about like Linux in embedded devices? Like, you know, Android is a Linux variant, you know, iOS is a Linux variant, you know, we've got a Linux that runs a whole buttload of, you know, SCADA systems around the world. Are we talking about those two, or are we just talking about the OS level?
Yeah, we're talking about the OS level, and since these are supercomputers, I would imagine they're not running Android. I assume you could. But when in this view, when we're looking at operating system rather than operating system family, Linux is something that is an unidentified distribution of Linux, whereas they do have the breakdown. If you look at the table below the graph, you can see that they've broken out. 15 of them are running SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 11. 9 of them are running CentOS. 5 are running BullX Linux. Don't know what that is. 4 running Red Hat Enterprise Linux 6.2, BullX Supercomputer Suite, don't know what that is, several other versions of Red Hat Enterprise, Kylin Linux, Windows Azure, there's one, Windows HPC 2008 is another one. So those are the two Windows machines. Scientific Linux makes the list, Red Hat Enterprise, BullX, and SUSE Linux. So they have the distributions broken out a little bit here as well. So there are 410 just identified as Linux. So maybe it's Ubuntu, maybe, I don't know. I don't know what it is. And you can actually scroll down the list in the graph if you wish here as well to kind of get the color reference on the graph. So that's kind of interesting. Okay. What would you guys like to pick as the next category to drill into and kind of move along with our little experiment here. Mm-hmm. What's of interest?
I'm looking at your screenshot here.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's in the category section? What can you click in there?
Okay, so in the categories, we've already got operating systems, so we can select vendors, which we started with, application area, accelerator, coprocessor, segments, I don't know what that is, continents, interconnect family and interconnect, countries, geographical region, those might be interesting, processor generation, accelerator, CPU family, architecture, operating
We were talking about China a minute ago. Did you already do countries? Because I'd love to see where the U.S. ranks in the terms of Linux use.
Okay, let's take a look then. Let's kind of start pretty high. Let's look at the geographical region first, and then we'll dig into the countries from there. How's that?
All right, I like that idea.
Okay, so North America has 48.2%. Of the number of computers. So that's 241 of the 500 top supercomputers. Eastern Asia has 116, that's 23%. And the next is Western Europe with 63. So if we scroll down, we can see the full list here and the percentage of the share, the number of computers, as well as the processing and the number of cores as well, by geographic region. So now let's dig into the countries. Let's see what we've got there. Countries. Submit. And we wait.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. They've got a map instead of a pie chart.
Uh-huh.
So obviously the United States is the darkest green, so that means they have the largest amount. I'm sure they're using stats here. So 232 in the U.S. Looks like the next densest color here is 76 in China, and the rest is really hard to tell from the graph. But you see,
U.S. is the largest Linux using group.
Let's see how many are in Canada, my home country here. 9. Okay. And 4 in Brazil. What's this down here? Chile has some? But it's not coming up with a number. I wonder why. Let's try the UK. They have 30. And Australia, they have 6. Russia, 5. Sweden has 3. Norway has 3. And Germany has 22. France has 27.
Drill down to households, because you could be like Crossman household. 1.
Yeah.
Actually, technically, 2.
Yeah. Let's see if we can. So I'm going to click on, and nothing happened. So I guess not. All right. They haven't sliced it and diced it that deeply. So the United States is 46%, 232. They do have the graph, the pie charts as well. Oh, interesting. Okay. So 46% for the United States, 15% for China is the next largest, 6 for Japan, 6 for the UK, 5.4 for France. That's percent. Okay. 4.4 Germany, 1.8 Canada, India 1.8, 1.6 South Korea, 1.2 in Australia, and 1.2 in Switzerland. And the rest are 1 or less, 1 or fewer percentages of the total number. So we're getting into the single digits. Once you get down to Ireland, Austria, Denmark, Taiwan, Malaysia, and Hong Kong. Wow. Okay. So that's countries. Interesting stuff. Glad they had the map. That helps the numbers. So we're
part of Russia up there?
Yeah, that's part of Russia. And that's part of Canada way up there. I'm sure they don't have a supercomputer up here. It'd be good for the cooling, I guess, up near the North Pole. But anyway, what else should we look at here? Interesting stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, while you're looking at that, we're at the bottom of the hour, and then we'll continue on. It is our All Linux Show. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, 347-884-8881. We'll get John, get you through. We are doing our All Linux Show with our Linux expert, Larry Bushy, and it's Linux and Total World Domination, and we're talking about it right here tonight. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show. And see, Larry did get me passing notes using the video. See how cool that is?
Amazing the way this works.
Right? Technology.
Analog technology to the rescue.
Right? Oh, wow. I've got so many chat windows. Craig, I have to turn off one of you.
I'm sending some Larry some info in the Hangouts chat room, and I think he's getting it now.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay. So, I think one more look at some of the statistics before we move on. And that might be, let's see, the processor generation. Let's see how old these processors are that they're using or what type of processor. So it looks like 379 are Intel Xeon processors. Another 35 if you count the next row down. So that accounts for over half. There's a PowerBQC. Is that anything like a power processor? Maybe not.
PowerFrick.
And a couple more Xeons further down, some Opterons. So looks like Intel has the lion's share. So interesting statistics, if you're into statistics. If not, you've been really bored, and we should move on. Okay.
Yeah, let's move on.
All right. So, but continuing on with the supercomputer theme, if you will, ZDNet has an article, and we've included a link to that in the show notes as well, where they take a look at the same statistics that we were looking at, and they did something interesting in terms of the operating system count over the years. And they've got a nice little graph there. Let me show that on the screen as well. And make sure I've got the right window. There you go. And you can see there that since 2000 and looks like 3 or 4, there we go, 2003 or 4, it's been, it jumped right up. And now it's definitely the large portion of the top 500. And Stephen J. Von Nichols here.
What I'm wondering is, when did it jump up? Did you say in 2004?
Yeah, somewhere around there. It looks like about halfway between 2000 and 2005. So what does that make it? 2002 and a half. Hmm?
When was Vista released?
Oh. Interesting.
No, January 2007.
Oh, so it wasn't Vista that did this.
Wasn't Vista.
Some update to...
Well, wait, it was released to manufacturers in November of 2006. General availability was in 2007. So what was it in 2004 that kicked that up a notch?
By the way, Jonathan said that statistic may not be accurate since several of the people polled were asleep.
Yeah. I think that's a hint.
Yeah,
this is
a big hint.
This is
dull and boring. So, there you go. Sorry, guys. Am I a real geek or what?
Yeah, maybe
okay.
A little geeky tonight for this one. Okay.
Okay. Tell you what. I just went back
you'd be geekier
2003,
if you know.
And in 2003, the largest share was Unix, followed closely by Linux. So Unix was the operating system that had the most supercomputers or represented the most supercomputers back in 2003. Mm. So there you go. Linux took over from Unix.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of makes sense. If you're interested in another perspective on things, and this is a little irreverent perspective, if you will, Brian Lunduke, who is he's a writer now for Linux.com, but he has he's one of the founding podcasters on the oh, what's the name of the podcast that he's on? Chat room, help me out. Brian Lunduke. He's also community manager over at SUSE Linux these days, community media, at least. So Linux Action Show, that's the one. So he's got a little more information on this, looking at it from a little more comedic point of view, as Brian is wont to do. So you might want to take a look at that when you've got a chance, and if you're interested, and if you're not completely bored by this whole topic.
by the way, Addison says 3 out of 2 people aren't good at math.
Yeah.
Did you know 9 out of 10 statistics are made up on the spot?
Yeah.
I knew that.
We're getting the hint from our listeners that we need to, yeah, exactly.
did you know that on Computer America, 1.1 co-host is completely okay with Linux statistics? I hear that number is dropping.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, very, very slightly.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
See, Craig, I actually did go to the chat room. I just didn't click the sign in button.
Oh, okay. Well, now you're in. Okay. By the way, my chat room has hung and crashed on me 5 times now tonight, but it's because I'm evidently when I use the IM window in the chat room, that's when it hangs. So something's going on there. So I don't know.
It happens when I click.
I'm going to charge you with this mission, Charles. I want you to find me an alternative chat room that we can use. You know?
An alternative chat room.
Yeah, that would because right now we're using add-on chat. And maybe we can find an alternative chat room because this one is...
Now, what features are important to you?
Everything that you find in the add-on chat is pretty much important.
Gee, thanks, Craig.
Well, I like...
Send a text message to everyone else in the chat room.
Well,
that's number one.
The administrative control.
It has to be readable by everyone else in the chat room when you send it. That's requirement number two.
Well, now of course, said that the chat room hasn't crashed on them in weeks.
In weeks.
Yeah. Knock on wood.
It's like Windows.
Yeah. And I have to admit, I have not upgraded to the latest Java upgrade.
I'm terrified of that.
I am terrified. Every time it happens, I'm terrified. But, you know, it's hanging so much, I think I'm just going to do it, you know, and just go for it. Because, by the way, once you burn a bridge, you can't go back. You can't go to the earlier version of Java. I've tried.
Sure?
Yeah, I've tried and tried. Something in there is still, when you can't go back to the earlier version. I don't know.
Are you sure?
I am sure. I can't anyway.
Are you sure?
Have you?
Now, all of our users are going to have to create new accounts and do all that other stuff if we switch to another one. You're aware of this, right?
Yeah, I know. So,
okay.
Or I can continue to wait. They keep promising that they're going to upgrade this. The add-on chat room is going to go to a HTML5 version. They say it's around the corner. You know, it's
what I am tempted to do is to – oh, wow. Now, that is somebody we might use.
What?
Huh. Well, have you ever used an IRC chat room?
Yes, I have.
Right?
Yes, sure.
Freenode has these web chat versions in it, but it's got a built-in – it's got a VPN. So you can actually it's like suggesting here, you want to connect to this, connect via VPN. And it's pretty cool looking. And now it's got a nickname. It's got the channel they want to get into. And I bet I could edit all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have our own straight up Computer America embedded IRC chat room. And then
yes,
I wouldn't have to be in front of a computer to actually use a chat room. I could pull it up on my iPad. I could pull it up on my Android. I could pull it up on my phone.
Right.
With any basic client.
Why don't you set it up, configure it, you know, once you have configure it up and then we'll give it a shot and see how our users like it. Okay, how about that?
I'm going to go mute for a minute.
Well, don't do it now. Don't do it this moment. No, don't do it. Don't do it now, but you know, after the show, go ahead and set something up, you know, and we'll see if it works, okay?
Okay. Well,
yeah.
The alternative suggestion might be, you know, I think Microsoft has something you could do. You could set up an exchange server, and then you could install Office 365, and then you could use Link.
And then
first you've got to buy a computer to make into the I think the IRC chat is probably better.
I was going to say, and then we could just kill ourselves because we clearly hate ourselves. Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah.
That's an awful suggestion. Of course, that was tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. Horrible.
Jonathan says Charles doesn't get paid enough.
I thought Larry had gone over to the dark side for a moment. I didn't realize it was just a Jedi mind trick.
That was my sarcasm showing there for a second.
All right. Okay. So
let's see 2101.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Not during the show, Josh.
I've already done it. I don't know what's wrong with you. I've already done it. I've already created the chat room.
All right.
Okay, put the URL for the new chat room in the existing chat room, and everybody move over there. Oh, man.
All right.
We'll abandon this live on the air.
Yes, exactly. So, everything more, is it all focused on Linux dominating the world? Is it all focused on supercomputers? Is that pretty much the angle?
It is. It is. I mean, I could leave you with one last thing. You know, according to Brian Lundu, considering the number two ranked supercomputer, the Titan, assuming the only factor that contributes to the frame rate of a game running on one of these supercomputers is the number of floating point operations per second.
M-flop.
That means that Portal, when running on the Titan, should be able to hit 26,474,358 frames per second.
Dear God, what did you just say?
That's really...
That would be a lickety-split Portal game running on a supercomputer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing that is missing from this one.
Now he's still doing it. He's doing it right on
there. Oh, there it is. Got it. I win.
All right.
We win. It was a contest, is what it was.
I win.
All right. Is it without a supercomputer either?
I did it without a supercomputer.
All right. So give us the link and we'll go in there.
Well, hold on. Wait.
Wait what?
I'm gonna take this. We'll test it out live here on the air because you know this is how we roll.
Evidently, yeah.
Am I gonna
have administrative access to this, Charles? You know, and also
when we get in there, I mean, I've got some free noting things I've got to do.
Okay, all right.
Don't worry. Okay. Be happy. All right, so everybody in the chat room, if you want to transition to our beta test chat room, see, Charles is just cool this way.
Yeah.
You can go to the link that's in the chat room. Mm-hmm. Or for you, Larry, here's yours.
Okay.
Oh, right. I have another one. Okay.
We're just testing.
Yeah.
And we've got guest 3858.3 already in there, and then I'm in there as ADM Husker. Oh, and I'm the admin. Check that out.
Okay.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now we'll do. Now I can change this.
Oh, you've got to put in a CAPTCHA. Okay.
Yeah. Again, everybody in the Computer America chat room. Yes, we are testing this kind of on the fly. There is some embedding and all that other stuff that we could do with it all. But it's fun stuff. Oh, that's why it changed. I get it. Okay.
So I'm in here with Fort. We're in.
Okay. Now what am I looking at a bunch of code here.
You're looking at code?
Yeah, okay.
I think
it presents a generic chat window before it goes into the graphical one.
Yep.
Okay, so now
there we go.
Where do I type? I see Star Fortress, I see me, I see guest, I see Addison CPA. Mm-hmm. Now, where do I type in here? Oh, I see.
It's down at the bottom.
Right at the bottom.
Check that out. Even Addison. Yeah,
there you go. And that's how easy it is to set things up with open source software.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, how do I get admin status here?
Well, I have to go on
and
register the Computer America chat room and then register the users on it and all that other stuff. And look, it's host Craig Crossman.
I did that. Yeah.
Once I do all of that, howdy going Linux, Larry. Hiya, Craig. Mm. Fortress is here, and this is me.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
And here, look, Craig, I can do topic, Computer America, test bed. Bam! Topic is already set. Admiral Husker, that would be me.
Craig, it's not claustrophobic in here.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, it's,
use a bigger window. Open a window.
I did.
What, a tiny window?
How do I make the type bigger? And how do I just have that whole status bar there and all the things that I would have in the add-on chat room? I don't see any
now,
kind
see,
of tools.
Here's the thing. Wait.
Yeah.
You don't have all of this on your web interface, right?
Yeah.
Because I haven't set up the chat room completely yet. Like, we have to register the room. We have to lock it in so that it doesn't go away when we're not here,
okay,
right? And then we set up admin users. There's all, it's the same kind of setup you had to do with add-on chat, except this one now you can actually embed it. Oh, wait. Oh, no, Larry's still using the web interface. But what makes it even cooler is I could actually fire up my thank you XChat IRC client and do all of this perfectly. Like, I could have it all set up, and everybody who comes to the website can log in using this. And, oh, by the way, it's not Java.
No.
Right. All you need is a command line.
Browser.
Really?
All you need is a browser.
All you need is a browser.
Yeah. And Craig, yes, I know you're going to be like, I want it to be prettier. Well, yes, once I get it all registered and once we get everything out, everything set up and ready for prettiness.
Okay. All right.
Then you can get all the prettiness.
Well, I'm going to leave out of here now because and you go ahead and do all that. I'm going to stay in the add-on chat room right for now. And then we'll go ahead and do that, okay?
Look at that. Embed it in your website,
yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, we'll do the embed in the website. We'll do it correctly. All right, so listen, let's get back to the topic of Linux. Now was that Linux that we were running, or was that HTML5? Or what was that we were doing?
That's HTML5, but it's running an actual IRC over on Freenode, and Freenode is run on a Linux server.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Jonathan, if the font can be made bigger, you know, all the things that you can do in the add-on chat, you can customize, you can change the color of your type. I mean, any user can do that because you have that little status bar at the bottom of the window, you know.
Right. And in the upper left-hand corner of that window, there's a little drop-down that has options. And under options, you can choose the color. You can choose,
how about emoticons?
Show nicknames on, I don't see anything for emoticons, but that doesn't mean they're not there. It's just there's no option setting for it.
Just stuff we would have to actually get set up with and get everything done. And what we could end up doing, what I probably will end up doing, is finding a better control plus or minus to make the font bigger. Yep. Bam. Oh,
or you could use a different IRC client if you really wanted to.
You could use an online IRC client, you can use a different one. And that's what I'll do. I will get our room set up on Freenode. We will get the hashtag Computer America, you know, IRC one. They can use the web one. Or if we want to be really cool, because we are a tech show, you know, it would be great to actually have our own IRC channel. You can go, and now what's even cooler is you'll end up with people who will come to the IRC, right, who'll come into the IRC chat room from other places on the network just based on the number of viewers we have. And Jack Dev says, yay for not Java.
Yes. I think there's a lot to be said for that.
ChatZilla, Star4, right? XChat is still my favorite.
Yeah, well, yeah. And just recently, Linux Mint 17 went to HexChat with an H in front of it. I don't know what the difference is, but
it's the XChat started to go closed source. I think it was.
So they wanted to. Okay, that makes sense.
All right, so here's the deal. I mean, it's a Thursday. It's going to be Friday. We're going to continue to use the add-on chat. Charles is going to do his thing. And then, of course, during the day or something or whatever it is, you'll tell me when you think the chat room is ready. I'll go back in there, you know, check it out and see if we can get it to be, you know, pretty much close to the add-on chat room as we can do. And if everything goes well. And
you use Firefox, too, right?
Yeah, I use Firefox, right.
Mm-hmm. See, that would be even better because you can actually install a plugin in your Firefox browser called ChatZilla, which is what we were just talking about in the chat room, right? You can add it to your browser, and then all of a sudden, guess what? Oh, see, yeah, and Fort beat me to it. you will just go and be like, oh, look, Chatzilla, bam, and it's perfect. It's beautiful, man.
All right.
It's awesome.
Well, let's see how it works.
I'm going to have to find a client for you that's all point and click, because I don't think you want to do, you know, /Nick.
No.
/Nick/topic.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I can do the four, because there's a whole, /4/help, and it gives you all the /Nick and slash. I mean, that's okay. I don't mind doing that. I don't mind the command line, but I'm saying for our other users too, we want to be able to have those nice little icons that can point and click and do it.
Right. Well, I mean, this is a computer show, so yes. I'm pretty sure anybody who would be listening to the show and doing all this is going to be like, yeah, this is fine. You know, signed in. If we've got people signing out and signing into all the places, this is cool.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. Well, yeah. we'll see what happens. Okay, good. All right.
The room is thinning out, and everyone's going over to the world controlled by Charles. Because it's Linux, and it is taking over the world.
My goodness. Well, this has been an interesting use of our time here, helping Craig to move even more towards the world of Linux.
Now,
and open source, yeah. And away from Java.
Yeah. Exactly. Look, you don't have to ask me twice. I mean, as I said, I hate Java. I don't like it. And if we can find it, because it's been hanging up. Even the guy who wrote the add-on chat Java doesn't like Java. That's Chris Dewar. He's the in charge of it. He doesn't like it either. We have their add-on chat tech guy. Greg was on the show. He just stopped in. And he said, you know, that they're working to try to get the HTML5 version of it up and running. So, you know, we'll see. But in the meantime, if we can get this other one working, like Charles feels that we can, then we'll put that up on the Computer America website, and we'll do an update on the show notes, and we'll get everybody over there. Yeah, Johnson, if you build it, they will flock. Yes, exactly. So, there it is.
Yeah. Or we could take the Apple approach,
which is what?
If I build it, you have no choice. You must come. You have no choice.
Yeah.
I tell you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, someone who shall remain nameless unless Craig goes and logs back into the IRC chat said, "Welcome, Craig, to 1997.
Wait, yep, welcome, Craig, to 1997. Back with all the tech people who are running on this. My add-on chat died again. Jack Death, see? It's time. Add-on itself. You know, and Jack Death, I'm going to stay in here if anyone else is interested.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm gonna. We have Addison's in there. And we're going to make Addison the admin, and we'll do all the things that we did.
We'll get it all there.
Addison's in charge.
There'll be a link right from the Computer America website, I'm sure.
Addison's in charge of the chat room. That's going to stay that way. You know,
well, we can embed the web free node right there. So where the add-on chat room is right now, it's a matter of switching code, and then bam, all of the users can come in, and they can see the web interface on it. But, like, I'm going to be using either Chatzilla or XChat. You know, I prefer XChat. Excuse me. Or I might actually do it via the command line just to be hackerish. That'd be interesting. You know, so it's fun stuff. I'm looking forward to it. This is yay!
Okay.
Uh-huh. Jonathan, back in the add-on chat, Jonathan said, certified fascist dictator Charles.
Yes!
CFD.
Yeah. Oh, well, if you build it, they will flock. I'm digging it. I'm thinking once we get it all up, you know, I'm going to – here, watch this. Vegas guy, join us.
Yeah, exactly. Las Vegas guy just came into the chat room too.
All the cool kids are doing it.
All right. Now, coming up in the next hour, by the way, we're going to move switch gears, and we're going to go into our emails. These are a collection of emails that that Larry collects over the month that talks about from users to listen to the show and to the Going Linux podcast, and he reads them and answers the questions, and these come directly from the listeners to our show, as well as to the Going Linux podcast. So that's all coming up in the second hour of the program. This is the Computer America Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, on the Boost Radio Network, on the IRN Radio Network. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Lots more Linux coming up. Stay with us.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight.
Woo-hoo!
Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host,
the great and powerful Craig Crossman.
I think something is wrong with Craig's audio. That sounded really, really like, you know, up there.
A little wonky, yeah.
It's weird. I know Craig's usually more of a higher octave than that, so yeah. I don't think that's what it was.
And you are?
There's a pause there. Oh, I'm the guy setting up the IRC chat room.
Well, this is hour two of the Computer America Show. My co-host, certified ethical hacker Charles Tendell, is quickly working on a brand new chat room as we speak.
Isn't this how the video thing came about, too?
Yeah.
I have an idea. Watch this.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. You know, and I was like, don't do it during the show. And, of course, he's doing it during the show, but that's okay.
Well, by the time you said don't do it during the show, I'd already done it.
It was done.
Yeah.
It was already there. Like, it was like, oh, idea, done.
Well, and I mean,
look at our IRC chat room already.
Yeah.
Look at how many people are in that chat room already. See,
yeah.
People are enjoying it. People are like, we're moving away from this.
Yeah.
And more Java.
Hopefully soon. You know. All right. Well, maybe, you know, next day or two. You know, we'll see how it goes. In the meantime, if what we're going to do is move or change or segue into emails. And again, if you just go to our show notes page at computeramerica.com, you'll see the two links. It'll be the second one now. It'll just say emails. Click on it, and you can see the Google Docs document. You'll see everything that we're going to be reading, emails we're going to be reading today, July the 17th. And I guess let's start off with the first email. And this is from Vic from the UK. And evidently he's upgrading. He's going to a new chat room, I think.
Yeah, I don't know whether he's upgrading chat or whether he's just – well, let's find out. So Vic said, hi, chaps. You were discussing upgrading the operating system, backup user files and settings and restore them to a clean install or restore them after a clean install. You had previously in episode number 245 recommended backing up and reinstalling applications with dpkg -get-selections. I'm getting ready to move to Mint 17 from Mint 13, so I'm keenly interested in this.
What happened to 14, 15,
run,
and 16?
Hmm?
You skipped 14, 15, and 16?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's just it, because you can. Realistically, though, he's moving from a long-term support release to a long-term support release, so all the ones in between were the interim releases. And that's not uncommon with Linux distributions, especially those that are based on Debian and Ubuntu, where the long-term support releases are supported for a long time. And the interim releases are where a lot of the innovation happens until the next long-term support release comes out. So Linux Mint 13 was LTS, as they call it, and 17 is the most recent, and it is also LTS. So Vic continues, if I run dpkg-get, I see a whole load of software that Mint has installed and that I haven't manually installed, for example, Mate, specific versions of the Linux kernel, etc. I wouldn't think that forcing these specific older software to be installed on a newer version of Mint would be a good idea. I've also read that dpkg-get selections can lead to future problems, as it tells apt, which is the package management, one of the package management tools, to treat all dependencies as manually installed. And Vic gives us a link to his reference there from podcast.ubuntu-uk.org from back in 2009. He continues, Mint Backup, Linux Mint has its own backup software called Mint Backup, it's actually their name on top of, I don't know, maybe they wrote their own, but I think they just branded an existing one and called it Mint Backup. So Vic says, Mint Backup seems to be doing the same thing, just with a graphical user interface. Mm-hmm. I suppose I could just deselect everything and only select the software I recognize. I just want to get this list of major apps that I manually installed on Mint 13, Google Earth, Remina, etc., and let Synaptic or something else on Mint 17 then resolve the dependencies. Short of manually writing down a list of everything I installed, which seems daft after all, aren't computers supposed to do the tedious work for us? I can't find a solution. The only other thing I can think of is running DPKG a Mint Backup after a fresh install, then again before doing the upgrade, and doing a diff on the two files. I'll explain all this when we're finished with the email. With your extensive experience of upgrading, what has been your solution or preferred method? Thanks very much, Vic. So back in episode 245, we had recommended on the Going Linux podcast a command line tool that allows you to to generate a text file that has everything that you have installed on your computer, put it in a text file, and then there's a corresponding command that allows you to reinstall everything from that file once you do an upgrade. Well, Vic's concern is that maybe there's some older software there that he doesn't want to have installed, and he's got this concern that the Ubuntu UK podcast had mentioned back in 2009 that maybe it's not going to work at all because of this manually installed behavior from DPKG. So just to address those two things, using this command line is the equivalent of using the graphical method with Mint Backup. So it's essentially the same thing, except that Mint Backup generates the list for you as it's doing the backup, and then when you do the restore, it lets you select from the list. If you're using the DPKG method from the command line, a couple things to note is that it is not recording the version of applications necessarily. It is just recording that you have an application installed. Remember that Linux provides you with the ability to get automatic upgrades, not only for the operating system and security patches and all those other good things that every other operating system does, but it provides you automatic upgrades for any application that you have. So when you run the restore using the DPKG from the command line, it's going to say to your Linux system, install all of these things, because I had them installed before, and then if there's an older version being reinstalled, when it goes to search in the repositories, it's going to say, oh, there's a newer version, and it will install the newer version. So that takes care of itself. Now, the issue around what podcast.ubuntu.uk was saying is an issue that was true back in 2009. If you installed a package using the command line, in particular DPKG as your installation, it is going to, the operating system would back then treat that as a manually installed application and wouldn't give you the automatic upgrades. Mm-hmm. Well, in Mint 17, they have fixed that so that even using DPKG or any other command line method of installing a package, you get the upgrades. It's going to know that this is something you want updated. And if you really don't want it updated, you go into the package manager and into the sources, and you tell it not to update those. So you kind of block them, if you will. So that takes care of that. Mm-hmm. So, Vic, those are your first two issues. And then just to make a recommendation here, if you've already got the backup using Mint, the Mint backup, when you install Mint 17, you go back into that backup using Mint backup, that backup you've made to a hard drive or wherever you put it, And yes, you just make the selections for the applications that you want to install. You mentioned Google Earth. You mentioned Remino, which is a front end for doing remote control of other computers, and that will do the same thing. If on the command line version, using the commands that we gave you in that particular episode of Going Linux, you would actually need to go in and edit the text file and remove what you don't want installed and just to, use that file to restore what you do want installed. So it's definitely a lot less work using the graphical Mint backup way, and that's what we would recommend that you do. And you asked, what is my solution for doing this? I don't do any of that. I back up my home directory, I restore my home directory, and I just reinstall from the package manager those applications that I need to install, but I install them as I use them. And what that really means is there are a few things that I install right away, like, Synergy, that's the one I was trying to remember, which is allowing me to control other computers from a single mouse and keyboard. I install Audacity, of course, because I need that to edit podcasts and so on. And all of the stuff that I use regularly, I install right away. But if there's something that I forget, I don't worry about it until I need to use it, because it's a very simple matter of clicking on the package manager and going and getting it. And within a minute, I have it installed. It's not like you have to go and purchase the software. It's not like you have to go and download it from a website or anything like that. You just go to the package manager, click the checkbox, say install, and you're done. And what that really does for me is that if there's a package that I installed when I got the last update to Linux Mint and I haven't used it since then, I don't install it. And it just keeps my system a little bit cleaner. So, Vic, hopefully all those suggestions help. Long answer to a short email.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Let's go to Kevin in Annapolis, Maryland, who wants to know NAS or not.
Right. Right. And NAS, of course, stands for Network Attached Storage. Kevin says, hello, Larry and Bill. Bill is my co-host, of course. First, a quick thanks. You were kind enough to give me some advice and direction on my search and purchase of a new Linux computer. I selected a System 76 Galago Ultra Pro laptop with an SD hard drive. All in all, a very good machine. And System 76, by the way, pre-installs Ubuntu on its computer. So good choice, Kevin. I have also purchased a Samsung laptop for my wife and left it as a Windows machine, as it is nearly impossible to load anything on it, and she simply does not care. Well, Kevin, that spousal approval factor is just something you have to live with, right? With that, I have an old Dell desktop that I want to set up as a storage system and had decided to use FreeNAS to complete the system. I have installed FreeNAS and have begun to read up and set up the system. The more I read, the more I question my ability to complete this setup and manage it. I did want the system to be accessible from any internet connection, and NAS appeared to allow this with relative ease and is accessible to Windows and Linux. I also wanted to use an external drive to back up my laptops. My reading suggests strongly to not use such a unit, and I cannot yet understand how to set that unit up as a single-use drive. Given this, would you recommend I continue with a NAS or a more traditional server system? Thanks for all the hard work, and thanks in advance for any help on this little trifle. Sincerely, Kevin in Annapolis, Maryland. And so,
can you believe the IRC
can do that?
What was that now?
No, Jack, go away.
Yeah, logging out of the IRC. Charles is still messing around with it and getting it fixed up. So, so with Kevin's question here, I would recommend that you abandon the whole NAS thing. FreeNAS is great. It's based on BSD, if I remember correctly. But one of the things you'll find, if, and I'm sure you have already, is that it takes over the entire computer. The entire box is the NAS system, and that's all it will do. It is a single-purpose machine at that point. And there is some setup to be done. And if you think that it's beyond you, there are much simpler ways to get what you're looking for, Kevin. What you really said you want is a way to share files between Windows and Linux computers. And you wanted something, by implication, you wanted something simple and easy to maintain and set up. So what I would recommend is to set up a server, as you suggested, using a Linux server. And in fact, you don't even have to use a server distribution if you don't want to. You can use just a plain old desktop setup and use remote VNC or something like that to log into it and maintain it from there. You can set it up with Windows shares on the hard drive, assuming that you're using the hard drive from the laptop as your share. And if not, maybe you've got a large external storage device, like a large hard drive or something, external drive that you're connecting your laptop to. Certainly you can set those up with shares, and you can use Linux to do that. There are plenty of ways to set up file shares. We've got our articles on the Going Linux podcast articles page on how to do that from way back in the day. It's been a long time since we did that, but those instructions still apply, and you can easily set this up to set up a Samba share, Samba being the technology used for setting up the share, and that makes it share compatible with Linux, Mac, and Windows, and I know you don't have a Mac, but can share all the files on there, manage it from the old Dell laptop, and you can log into your Dell laptop from either the Samsung or from the System 76 if you want to just leave the lid closed and let it run there as a server. So lots of possibilities there for distributions as well. You could use probably Ubuntu as your distribution on the Dell because you've got Ubuntu on the System 76, and I would recommend sticking with the same distribution if you want to simplify things, because all the commands will be the same between the two systems. And if you don't want the Unity interface because the Dell is older and can't handle the processing power needed for that pretty heavy graphical user interface, you can use something like Lubuntu that uses the LXDE interface, or Zubuntu that uses the XFCE, a couple of very lightweight desktop computers and desktop environments, and all the commands, the terminal commands, will be identical between your System 76 and the Dell, regardless of what desktop environment you're using. And of course, if you do want to log in graphically, that desktop environment will let you do that as well. So that's my recommendation, Kevin. Okay. So abandon that FreeNAS if you're not comfortable with it. It does take a little bit more technical know-how, and setting up the server and Samba share is probably a lot easier for you.
There are, there are a lot of NAS.
You've got a very simple requirement here.
Yeah, there are a lot of NAS units out there that, you know, pretty much work fairly easily, you know, but of course you have to buy the hardware. I mean, it's everything.
Right.
It's all built into one device, and basically part of their attraction is that they're easy to set up, you know.
Yes, exactly. And they are, in fact, typically using embedded Linux to run them. And when you set them up, you essentially just connect them up to your network, your home network, and the file share is already set up, or they give you a web page to log into that gives you administration capability on the NAS box. and they're using, sometimes they're using FreeNAS. More often than not, they're using some sort of embedded Linux on there that they've provided with a graphical front end to make it easy for you to administer it. And, yeah, so that's another route to go. But I wasn't suggesting that mainly because Kevin already had a laptop that he was saying he wanted to set up that way. So, yeah, that if you were starting from scratch and wanted to set up a shared drive and had the money to go out and buy a NAS device, that would certainly be the simplest way to get it set up.
Okay. All right.
All right.
All right. So let's move on to
Larry. You can come back into the IRC. It's filling back up, and I've successfully registered the channel and made Fort a I've made Fort an op, and I'm going to make Addison an op. Do that.
Now I'm in here, okay. And I still did I go in the right way? You gave me a link.
Yes, you probably did.
Okay, yeah, but it looks the same, so I don't know what.
There you go.
Now you're
it looks the same because you're still looking at the web interface version.
Okay, so I need to go to
Charles. You're still in Colorado, right?
I am, sir.
Yeah, the captcha it gave me was 420.
Moving
along.
It's actually sad that that's what Colorado has become known for now. Is like,
for like beautiful mountains, gorgeous skiing, and what's it known for? Pot.
it doesn't help either that that we're known as the Mile High City. So it's just getting worse and worse. But, you know, and I've had this conversation on many different occasions with people that are like, oh, man, how does it make you feel? That's going to suck. Da, 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 da. I was like, no, what sucks worse here is the stupid gun laws. That's what sucks worse. But the pot thing, that's not a big deal at all. Like, when was the last time you heard about somebody getting stoned on pot and going to robbing a bank? No, it doesn't happen. They go, they eat a Twinkie and take a freaking nap. That's how it works. Okay. So we might see obesity go up a little bit in the Colorado area. But, you know, here's a more beautiful thing, right? And my numbers are probably off, and it might be an invalid statistic. But the only way that the pot industry got Colorado to pass the bill was they said, look, we will give you the first $10 million we make for education if you pass this bill. It went legal January 1st, okay? January 1st. February 1st, they cut them a check.
Ah, yes,
a month later. So much revenue generated from just marijuana sales as a whole that it's ridiculous. And it is a booming industry. It is phenomenal. And, you know, I those people who have the problem with pot, I understand your problem, you know. I understand your problem and so on and so forth, but fine. Be upset. Don't come here.
Yeah.
You know, and don't come here and try and mooch off our money when we get there too.
By the way, getting back to the chat, Charles. By the way, I downloaded the Firefox plugin for Chatzilla, but it's going to ask me to restart. I have to restart the browser in order to take effect, and I can't do that because I would lose Hangouts and I would lose everything. So
See, this is why you have to be again with the cool kids.
I just have to wait. I have to wait until after the show, and then if you would stay on with me, I will. We can do it together.
And I've also already got the embed code for you too.
Okay. All right, good. All right. So
look at this.
Yeah, so maybe tomorrow.
If the Linux guy comes on and all of a sudden the whole show changed.
Right? The Linux guy comes on and stuff gets done.
That's what we're all about.
Exactly.
Using Linux to get things done.
All right. Well,
shall we go on to Tom's email?
Yes. Tom is having Tom is having problems partitioning his hard drive. I don't even know why you would – I mean, I know Charles feels the same way. I mean, I still partition my hard drive, although I have so much hard drive space. I wonder sometimes why I even bother to do it. I mean, I have a four terabyte hard drive that's totally empty. I mean, it's external hard drive, and so I'm just not even partitioning anymore. I'm just in the whole drive. I guess because the cost of hard drives is so inexpensive today, why you know, just buy a. If you need another partition, just buy another hard drive. Why partition anymore? I mean, do you agree with that, Charles, at this point?
There's really no point. I mean, back in the day, mm-hmm. right, back in the day, it used to be, you know, well, we got to put those files here, we got to put these files here. But yeah, we're gone are the days. Gone are the days are of how you say,
not enough room.
yeah, not enough room. Oh, I just remembered something that I can add to the chat room. That's cool.
He's on a one-track mind tonight. Yeah.
Well, it's Fort. Fort did it. Fort reminded me.
No, okay. It's all Fort's fault. It's all
Fort's fault. We should totally have a trivia bot.
Okay.
I can do trivia bot and ask trivia bot a question or to play a game, and people can sit in the chat room and play computer trivia games.
Can you roll dice too? Because I noticed that like you can do a roll, a slash.
I'm telling you, this is an IRC. There's so much more we can do.
You can do Linux trivia if you really want
right?
to.
Right?
Yeah. I just did a random roll in the chat room. So anyway, okay.
All right. So, well, you know, one of the reasons you might want to partition a hard drive is the very reason that Tom is asking this question.
Okay.
So let's read his email, and then we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. So Tom says, hi, Larry. I wanted to follow along with a video you made partitioning for dual booting. Mm-hmm. When I pull up GParted in Ubuntu 14 Live Disk or in Hiren's boot disk, my 500 gigabyte disk, all of it, shows up as unallocated.
Oops.
And, you know, Charles, you may want to weigh in on this one. So he logs into or boots up from an Ubuntu Live disk with the intent of partitioning it. He's got Windows 7 on his machine. When he logs in, his entire 500 gigabyte disk shows up as unallocated. He continues, that is correct. This is a Windows 7 machine with OS data and recovery partitions. In Ubuntu, I confirmed that the partitions are mounted. How do I fix this problem? So he's got three Windows 7 partitions, or four, depending on how it's configured. But when he goes into the partitioner in his live Ubuntu disk, it looks like one entire 500 gigabyte unpartitioned disk. Any thoughts as to why that might be, Charles?
No, wait, I want to understand what you just said. So he's partitioned it and he's broken it into.
No, he hasn't done anything yet. He's about to partition it, and when he logs into his Linux from the live DVD or the live USB stick, it looks to the partitioner like there are no partitions on there. It looks like a completely full or completely empty 500 gigabyte disk. He doesn't say whether it looks full or empty. Now, he says that without the partitioner running, he can use the file manager and mount those partitions and see the partitions, the Windows partitions. But when he runs GParted, the partition editor, he sees a full 500 gigabytes, which is the size of his disk, without partitions. It looks completely one drive.
Now, he partitioned it. He partitioned it with an NTFS file system, I'm assuming. Now,
I'm assuming that it came with Windows 7, and he hasn't touched it yet.
Okay, and he's trying
to dual boot with Ubuntu.
Ubuntu will do it for him. It'll auto partition
yes.
and do everything for him. So he really doesn't need to mess with GParted.
And that's what he should do.
What it sounds like is happening is he's not letting. What is it? It's not Unity. It's the installer. He's trying
right.
to skip a step and make a custom partition outside of GParted, outside of the installer. And GParted, while a good tool, he hasn't committed. That's the problem. And GParted, the extra step is commit your changes to it, but you don't want to do that if you're doing a fresh install. I would recommend
right.
he just go ahead and use the built-in installer. I can't remember for the life of me what that thing's called.
Ubiquity?
All right. Ubiquity, I think, is it. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
All right, we're at the bottom of the hour break. We've got another news tip bulletin from Marty Winston. And Charles is fervently working on our brand new chat room, and I understand it's almost done.
We'll see how it works out. This is the Computer America Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, on the Boost Radio Network, and the IRN Radio Network.
Join us in our new IRC chat room. Yay!
All right. I have to wait until I can reboot my Firefox, right? So I'm going to have to...
Well, you can do that. You can do that. Or you... Yes. You can reboot your Firefox and come back in and do all other stuff and yada yada. Mm-hmm. Or you could install XChat or one of the other ones. Or you can actually reboot it right now. You're only going to lose the Hangout, which is not a problem. But then again, yeah, you'll only lose the Hangout, and you only lose the Hangout for however long it takes you to turn off Firefox and turn it back on.
Yeah, and also the studio is also in Firefox. So I'd rather – I'm just going to wait until after – when we finish the show tonight, what we'll do is you'll stay with me, and then I'll reboot, and we'll see if we can get the chat up and running. Now, I don't understand why Lunchbox is so adamant. He says, I'm not using that program. I'm not making an IRC account.
But Lunchbox is in the IRC chat room.
So then what was the objection?
It's because he thought he probably had the same reaction that a lot of people have. Oh, God, I have to make another account. Well, no, not really. And, oh, God, it's hard to do. I don't want to have to install a program. And that's what he said specifically. Let me go back into the old chat room here. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm not making an IRC account. And I said, you don't. And you said you don't have to.
Right.
And then he said, I have not used that program in years. I said, Lunchbox, use the web chat link. Seconds later, Lunchbox is in the IRC chat room.
Okay.
Yeah. Easy peasy.
Japanese.
Except Larry keeps leaving.
I'm back in Hex Chat now.
Ah, wait. Where did you come in? Le Bushy.
Lunchbox. That's my French version. Le Boucher.
Lunchbox says he has bad memories of IRC. He said something about hackers.
I'll keep you safe, Lunchbox.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, that's something else we're going to end up doing. As we refine it, we're going to set the chat room to private so that it's either A, invite only, or B, they can only get to it from the web interface. Kind of defeats the purpose, because with us sitting here on the IRC, right? With us sitting here on the IRC, the more people that jump into this room, the busier it gets. And then, yes, because we've got our mods in here now, and we'll have ops and everything else, we're going to have the trolls that come in and get stupid, but we run the same risk on the chat, on the website.
Well, yeah, but see, as admin, I can kick them, I can boot them out, I can kick them out. Or
exactly.
I
and you can ban them.
Ban them.
Instantly.
Yeah, exactly. So you can do that in the other one, too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay.
No. You can not only ban an individual by IP address, set a negative cookie, and ban their username, you can ban their entire subnet range. So if you're like, yeah, I don't want you or anyone from the town of Umpty's Lunch on this chat. Bye.
Lunch. Okay.
Yeah, Umpty's Lunch. All right. So, all right. Well, as I said, after the show, Charles, you and I will kind of work this together and make this happen.
We can do that.
All right. In the meantime, we're talking to Larry Bushy. He is the host of the Going Linux podcast. And in this portion of the show, we're actually reading some of the emails that were written to him, and we just finished one with Tom, who was having a problem partitioning his hard drive. Again, if you want to read along with us, just go to our show notes page at computeramerica.com, and you'll see today's show, July the 17th, and just click the link there that says email, and you can read along and follow along with us. Now, let's go to Pete. Who has provided us with some links to Linux and open source tutorials.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So here's Pete. Pete wrote, Hi, Larry and Bill. Thanks for your show. It's always interesting and informative. I was hoping you could let your listeners know that I have released over 5 hours of step-by-step video tutorials on using Linux and open source tools in small businesses. The material is available on my website. Mm-hmm. And his website is opensmallbusinesssolutions.com. But don't jump there right yet, because mm-hmm. I've got a surprise for you at the end of this email. The first video series is over an hour and a half long, and available for free. It covers deploying Windows 7 using open source tools. In the series, we install Windows and a VirtualBox on a Mint machine. Then we add software and updates, create a default profile, and create an unattended file to automate the mini setup wizard. We also use driver packs to add support for additional hardware and image the system with CloneZilla. Finally, we add remote support to Parted Magic so that we can also easily deploy our image at remote locations. The second video series is 4 hours long and covers wow. using Zential Server, Linux Mint, and DDWRT to create a robust small business network. We use Samba 4, group policy, and scripts so that users can log on to any Linux or Windows workstation and have a consistent desktop experience, including access to their document folder and server-based shares. We also cover setting up backups, filtering internet access on specific computers, and remote support. The second series is available for $49, and here's the good part. Going Linux listeners can get $10 off by using the discount code GOINGLINUX. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to contact me. Thank you, Pete. So, there you go. We have a discount code for Pete's website for Going Linux listeners. $10 off the $49 regular price. So for $39, you can get all of his videos. And I'm assuming that he has different prices for the different video series that he puts together. But if you're interested in setting up your own small business server, this series, this four-hour-long series for $49, $39 for Going Linux listeners and now Computer America listeners will help you with videos to get that all set up. So
all
interesting
right.
stuff. Thanks, Pete, for sharing your website with us and also with giving us the unsolicited $10 off coupon. That's great.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to the next email here. Again, we're doing the emails that Larry has selected. And this one is from Walter. Walter evidently has become Microsoftless. Is that a word?
I did now. I like it. Microsoftless.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. After being a Microsoft user since the day I first started, Pro CPM being my last personal major operating system.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I have repartitioned and reformatted the last of it and gone completely Ubuntu 14.04. I had been using Ubuntu on and off for about 3 years. Actually, it all really started with the PC, the one I am using for this email. This PC is 8 years old, had XP, and was, of course, going out of operation because Microsoft is not supporting it anymore. I loaded Ubuntu and just started using it. This PC ran the fastest it ever did. I just loved it. Well, needless to say, I started using it more than the new one with Windows 7 on it. Well, without much more to say, I took the final plunge, reformatted and reloaded the new PC with Ubuntu, now happily residing on its hard drives. I now have 4 PCs running Linux. There were a few things that I had thought I could never do without Microsoft over, but I have found alternative ways around all of that. Perhaps not as automatic or fancy looking, but nonetheless fully functional, and I can work with that. Thank you, Going Linux. If it had not been for the hours and hours of listening to your shows, I may not have had the confidence to go fully Linux. I can now truly say there is no Microsoft running under my roof, and I love it. Mm-hmm. I never thought the day would come, but I am very glad it did. Thank you, Walter. Mm. Another happy customer.
Microsoftless,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so success story on converting from Microsoft software and K-Pro CPM to Ubuntu 14.04. And, you know, if Walter can do it, anybody can do it.
Yeah.
Well, Craig.
So,
yes.
So
switching from Microsoft might be okay for Craig. It's switching from that fruit flavored operating system might be a little more difficult.
OS 10.
Fruit flavored? There's a fruit flavored one?
Yeah.
I think
OS
X.
The Apple one. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's no longer Apple. It's pear.
Pear, lemon.
There used to be an orange computer. You know, there was an orange computer. That was an Apple clone, but Apple sued them and they went out of existence. That was years ago.
Of course, they sued them and went out of existence. There's another clone out there called the Dragonfly. Really cool. Imagine the glowing Apple logo on the back of your MacBook Air or your MacBook Pro, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And replace that with a Dragonfly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool. It looks great. And
okay.
I genuinely would love to have it if the hardware was up to specs.
Yeah, okay. John in Dallas is having trouble with Mint 17. Maybe he put a Dragonfly on it.
Maybe so.
Okay.
Hopefully, Charles, that Dragonfly is not just a sticker that you put over the Apple logo.
No. It's actually like out of the metal. It's really sexy looking.
Okay.
All right. So John in Dallas writes, "Hi, Larry and Bill. I'm having problems with Mint 17 running in VirtualBox current. I'm assuming he means the current version. When I start Mint, a warning pops up, Cinnamon running without hardware acceleration. That never occurred in Mint 16. I have NVIDIA GeForce 310 with current driver, 331, and that is in my Mint 17 directory. However, I can't get into Device Manager. It just won't open. Also, other weirdness occurs. Can't open sources list saying it's corrupted. Don't know how to fix that. Other than that, the OS works okay.
Yeah.
Seems to update. Then seems to update when needed. Thanks for the help and any suggestions, John in Dallas."
Now I want to make sure I understand. He's having trouble updating his app sources.
Yeah, when he goes to run updates, it gives him an error message essentially that says, "Yeah, can't do that," and so he can't get any of his updates.
Well, did he send you the error message?
Let me take another look. I was looking for my response to him. So taking a look, he says, it just says first when Cinnamon starts up, it says it's starting up without hardware acceleration. When he tries to install the NVIDIA driver, it says it won't open, and can't open sources list saying it's corrupted.
Okay.
Doesn't know how to fix that.
You have a solution?
It sounds like you might. What's your yours?
I've got some command line foo for him. You know, but he can do it through the GUI using the and I'm not in front of my Linux machine or my Ubuntu machine because I've actually recently switched over my main rig to a Kali. We were doing pen tests in California, so we're having some fun. Oddly enough, Kali, right?
Yes,
but,
with a K.
Right, with a K. But what he can do if he's on Ubuntu, you do sudo space nano, or you can actually use the gedit that comes with it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the space /etc/ I think it's apt/sources.list.
Right.
And open that up, and it'll give him all of the places where his package repositories are. Now, if that is actually corrupt, if there's something bad in that file, then he can simply go out there and do a couple of Google searches and find the actual current dump of the sources list, delete everything in his, add the copy and paste the other stuff into it, save it, then run sudo apt-get update, sudo space apt-get space update, and it should correct all of his issues.
Yeah. Yeah, and in fact, in a follow-up email, he mentions that in one of the forums where he went to get help, they suggested that he edit the sources list, and he says line one is malformed, but he's having some trouble actually following the instructions from the list. I had suggested that he take a look at some, especially around this NVIDIA driver issue, that it is a known issue with the NVIDIA GeForce GPUs freezing, and I was thinking that perhaps that was the main cause of the problem, and suggested that he take a look at that. But apparently that was not the issue, because when he responded back to me, he was saying about the sources .list file. So I'm thinking that's probably his problem. I haven't heard back from him, so perhaps he's either resolved the issue with the help of the forums, or he's decided to reinstall from scratch, which is another way to fix an issue like this.
Yeah.
Probably the most destructive way to do it. But if this occurred right on initial install, he probably has a backup and wasn't going to lose all that much, if anything at all. So hopefully, John, you've got that resolved, and let us know, if you will. Good stuff.
All right.
Thanks for the help,
Charles,
on that one.
All right. I want to skip over to – oh, well, we didn't do Greg yet, right? Spotted Linux.
We did not.
All right. Let's use Greg's Spotted Linux in the wild.
Yeah. So this will be an interesting one. Greg says, I like to hear your segment about Linux in the wild. It is pretty interesting to see where Linux pops up. I went over to the self-server cafeteria to work a grab to no, at work to grab a fancy coffee the other day. The coffee machine is one of those high-tech gizmos that grinds the beans for each order. You can also get all the various fancy coffee drinks like a vanilla latte. This machine is often out of order, usually because they don't refill it enough. This time, it was stuck on the BIOS screen where it was checking the interfaces. I decided to power cycle it. I plugged the power and plugged it back in. I guess he
pulled the plug and plugged it back in.
He pulled the plug. There we go. And plugged
it
back in.
Again.
Yep. Which usually fixes these kinds of problems. It got past scanning the interfaces and started booting up. Lo and behold, I see what looked to be a Linux scrolling by. I took a closer look, and this coffee machine is running Slax. Pretty cool.
Isn't this we talked about unusual places we find Linux? Didn't we talk about the coffee maker that runs Linux?
Coffee maker. Yes.
Is that it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is one in his cafeteria at work, which hey,
coffee maker.
See, you guys at Greg's work, keep filling that thing up properly so it doesn't crash like that. Because you're not refilling the coffee.
Okay.
Get in there. Do it right, guys.
Now, I understand that Engelbert Humperdinck has switched to Linux.
No, not that Engelbert.
Oh.
That's different Engelbert.
Oh, okay.
And he's got a short message here. He says, yep, I'm transitioning to Linux, especially since the latest distros have become less geeky / developer-ish / programmer-ish and more user-friendly. It, however, awakened my interest in the geeky stuff of computers. That's it. He is now a geek. it'll happen. That will happen. You start on Linux, and you end up, the next thing you know, you're making an IRC chat room for the Computer America show and installing it live on the air while everybody else is listening to the show.
Well, you know, if you want to read the rest of the we just don't have much more time. You can read Will. Actually, he mentions that he was listening to the Computer America number 72 podcast, but we just don't have time to get to Will. But you can read all these emails. Again, just go to our show notes page at computeramerica.com, and you can read all the other ones that we didn't have a chance to get to tonight. But there you go. Larry, it's always a pleasure having you here on the show. Thanks so much for being again here with us.
My pleasure.
So how do you like doing it now every third Thursday rather than third Tuesday after 5 years? Was it traumatic?
Well, with one data point so far,
yeah.
So good.
So
I'm afraid I bored people with all the statistics. But
yeah, next time we won't do statistics.
No statistics next time.
Yeah, next time.
Even testing. Even testing.
Even the hardened Linuxers were saying, you know, I was in IM saying, tell Larry to get on with it, you know.
No problem. I'll stick with the fluffy stuff from now on.
Stick with the fluffy stuff. Exactly. We love fluffy stuff. We're all fluffy stuff here, you know, for the most part. But
I've got a couple of stuffed tuxes over there.
I see them behind you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Larry, stay with us to the end because we have our hangouts out behind the scenes. So we'll do that as well.
Sure.
All right. But again, now that's it. Now, Charles, of course, after the show, you and I are going to work on this new. I'm going to reboot and everything, and then I'll get chat.
No, I'm leaving.
No. We'll get I'll reboot and get Chatzilla installed in my Firefox, and we'll see if this is something that we can actually use. I mean, he did this during the show, and because I'm sick and tired of Java, I've gone on record saying it. It just has too many problems. It keeps hanging, and I keep having to reboot. It's terrible, and so I'm just hoping that that this will work, and we'll get to see. What was it? Jonathan said that add-on chat was based on the IRC chat, and if you could do it in the so we can do everything in there. So we'll check it out. Coming up on tomorrow night's show, we're going to have G-Tech is going to be in the first hour. They have something that they would call the brain-computer interface. This is actually very cool. So actually you can use your mind to control what you want happening. You know, so if you're physically handicapped or you just want to think of something, this brain-computer interface that they're working on will actually allow you to control the computer. And also an app. We're going to have Soul Power on just for the first half hour, which uses your shoes to generate power wherever you go. That's right, your shoes. That's right, it's called Soul Power. And then in the second half of the second hour, we'll have computer and technology news brought to you by Slimware Utilities, the official optimization software of Computer America. So that wraps it up. Again, thanks to our good buddy Larry Bushy for all those statistics. And we're going to see him on next month's show when we talk more about the Linux operating system. So have a great evening, and Charles and I will see you tomorrow night. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes squiffy or floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.